Hello and welcome to Advanced Practice Weekly. I am your host this week. It's Natalie from the Advanced Practice team in the London region. Today we have two very special guests from a charity that you may or may not have heard of. It's a charity for NHS staff, Duty to Care. So I've got Harriet and Neerja with me. Harriet, could you introduce yourself for me?
Sure, Natalie. Thank you very much for having us. I'm Harriet. I'm one of the co-founders of Duty to Care. We're a charity that was set up in March 2020, and we provide completely free virtual mental health and wellbeing support for NHS workers.
My name is Neerja Joshi, and I am a GP in Southwest London. I came on board with Duty to Care earlier in 2021 this year, after the pandemic has shown that the huge demand for the services of Duty to Care. I was brought on as a clinical steer to help to guide the services provided by the charity. And I'm really grateful to be involved with such an important cause.
Wonderful. And Harriet, what is your background?
So I actually am not in the medical world at all. I run a PR business as my day job, but my husband is an anaesthetist. In an intensive care anaesthetist, and it was through watching his experiences working in the medical profession that I decided to set up the charity.
Wonderful, thank you for coming. So Harriet, can I ask you, I know you've explained briefly what the charity is, but what exactly is Duty to Care?
So effectively what we set out to do was to eliminate as many barriers to seeking support as possible for any NHS workers that may be experiencing challenging times through their work. As I've already mentioned, my husband is a doctor. He, when he first qualified, did go through a very challenging time experiencing levels of burnout and anxiety. And we were not able to get him any support through his trust at the time or through the NHS, purely just because of the wait for that service. We were fortunate in that we got him some help privately, and he had some CBT therapy. And he identified some other ways of changing his lifestyle to make a few tweaks, and he got back in control of his mental health quite quickly. But ever since then, we were both quite shocked that we were on our own in finding that. And I remember particularly well when the letter did come through offering him the CBT therapy. It was 6 months later and he'd been back in the workplace for 5 months. And it was just a bit of a sort of stark realization that, yeah, there are a lot of people probably not getting the support that they need when they really do need it. So over the years, he's experienced other testing periods, but he's very good at recognizing the signs and looking after his mental health. When the pandemic kicked in, obviously, it was like watching a rabbit in the headlights, and he and all his colleagues and so many of our wonderful NHS workers felt an enormous amount of pressure building up very quickly overnight. And I just felt compelled at that point to do something about it. I think I was very conscious that the wider world was just worrying about their own supplies of loo roll and not about the mental health of the people who were on the front line. And it's funny thinking back to that time now, because there was obviously all the clapping and lots of support, but at the beginning there really wasn't. Nobody was thinking about the impact mentally on the people who ultimately look after us. So the charity was set up very quickly. I approached a wellbeing expert, Sadie Reed, who's the founder of Hip and Healthy, co-founded the charity with me. And yeah, immediately overnight, we had a lot of signups. The need for the service was clear.
So one of the fantastic things about Duty to Care is that we look at very different types of therapy. So we appreciate that everyone's need is always going to be different. So for some people, traditional CBT might be really what they're looking for, willing to engage in. We've got some colleagues that have engaged with psychotherapy, which is a lot more in detail and looking at people's early life experiences, which might be impacting them now throughout the pandemic, which has brought things to the surface. But equally, looking holistically at NHS staff. So for some people, breath work and meditation might be what they need rather than exploring early life experiences. It might be very different. Personal training and nutrition, people are looking at very different ways of staying healthy and resilient and improving their well-being. And the thing which Harriet always says is that you don't have to be at a point of crisis to seek help. And that's just the wonderful thing about Duty to Care, is that whenever I've referred a colleague or a patient to duty to care, they've always said, but I'm not at that crisis point, and I don't, and like Harriet said, there's a feeling of guilt, and I don't deserve to be helped because I'm not in as bad a way as somebody else. And that's the beauty of duty to care, is that there's help available for everyone at whatever stage of their mental health journey they're going through, whether they want to build their resilience or whether they are going through an acute crisis, and all things are there to support people.
I think it's an excellent resource, and I think it's a really good point about the barriers and to people and clinicians accessing care, and it's that kind of timely intervention, isn't it? We know that obviously NHS resources are quite strained anyway, so getting access to CBT or mental health support can be a long time. Do you think that's what's quite unique about duty to care in terms of your turnaround time and people accessing those resources?
Absolutely. I think what we are very clear about in across all our communication is that this is not the answer. And really, the first thing is to communicate directly with or your colleagues or your place of work. But in the short term, you can sign up via the website privately, whatever time, day or night, after a shift. All you need is your NHS email address. And there you will see you'll get access to a directory. And there's a real range of practitioners on there, from psychotherapists to CBT therapists, but also yoga, breathwork experts, meditation, personal training, nutritionists. So we really recognize that different people need different things in that sort of moment of need, and hopefully they will be inspired to approach a couple of the people on the directory and have a conversation with them about what a course may look like for them. And what we do, we don't do any of the diagnostic work. We just connect the people who can provide these amazing services with the people that need them, and we foot the bill. So all sessions are completely funded by the charity.
So it sounds like you have an access to a complete range of holistic services. So would you agree that it's people can take a way to help their mental health that suits them best?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that what I hope is that they may need one service that we can provide at one stage, and then they may benefit from something else during a different challenging period. The main thing is there should be no barriers to seek. It should be quick, it should be easy, and it is free.
So if we were to talk through the process, I'm an NHS worker, I've got an NHS Net account. Obviously this audience will reach our audience who are in the advanced practice world, but I understand that anybody that works in the NHS can access your charity, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We felt quite strongly that it shouldn't be just for doctors or just for paramedics or anything else. So anybody in the NHS, all they need to do is put in their email address and they will receive an automatic response if that all goes through, the email address is correct, and that gets logged and checked, and then they will get a response with the login details, and then they have their conversations themselves direct with the practitioners. And it's our job is really just to control the level of spend direct with the practitioners so that we can afford it, our fundraise.
It's a very wonderful service. In terms of, if we're looking at the statistics of mental health out there in the workforce, are you aware of any of those statistics?
Yeah, we do monitor it quite closely. We've been very fortunate to be supported by the British Medical Association. They identified our charity right at the beginning, as did NHS Practitioner Health, and BMA have actually given us some funding, and they do very regular surveys, I think almost every month. And I know last month they put out a statistic saying 62% of doctors are living with one or more mental health condition as a result of work. And another survey found that thousands of doctors in the UK are considering sadly leaving the NHS in the next year as they battle with stress and burnout without adequate respite. So we can see that the need is there. And through the story that I told about my husband, it's not a pandemic specific thing, but obviously it was sort of crisis on top of a crisis in one way. And at duty to care, we obviously can see with the number of signups and the number of sessions, an increase in usage. We've actually had the same amount of signups in the last 4 months as we did in 12 months prior. So whether that's a combination of COVID and also awareness, hopefully, that the service is there, we would just love it to be on people's radars if they need it at that particular time.
Totally. That's a really striking statistic, actually. And I think you used the term at the beginning, but burnout is quite a huge thing for staff in the NHS. And it's probably a really good way to help prevent that or deal with some of the mental health issues that arise from carrying out your day-to-day work.
We've noticed a real change in the dialogue around seeking support as well. And when I first set up the charity, obviously I've mentioned my background is actually in PR. We had some media approach us wanting to sort of help promote the service, struggled to find NHS workers who felt it was appropriate to talk about the fact that they were anything less than full strength, perfect, the awful superhero word and everything around that. And I really couldn't believe how frowned upon people felt in 2020 it might be to need a bit of mental health support. And that, I'd say, I now, there's a noticeable difference. And we now have, brilliantly, people approaching us all the time, doctors, nurses, anyone who's used the service, saying, I'd love to tell people about this and tell me if I can give you a testimonial or share any of my experiences. So I do also feel that there's been a change in dialogue, which is brilliant. And the general public and hopefully NHS workers are realizing that they're not superheroes. They're not superhuman. They're brilliant and they're super, but they do need a bit of support at times. And that's nothing ever to be ashamed of. And our service and many other brilliant ones are available to them.
I think it's excellent. It's about understanding that to care for others, you really have to care for yourself in order to be able to do that. And if you are not doing that, then your own mental health impacts, doesn't it? And eventually at some point it will be detrimental to yourself. And I think it's really good to hear that change in dialogue that's starting to happen, even in such a short space of time. So what are the benefits of the practitioners on your directory? I'd love to hear a little bit more about who you've got on the directory, the types of service and the types of kind of help that can bring to people.
So we have a real range. We have a lot of psychotherapists and CBT therapists, and I have to say that's where we're heavily weighted towards. There's just been most uptake there, so we've added quite a few more just to meet that demand with monitoring as we go to make sure we're not over capacity and that the service can provide the quick support. But then we also have meditation experts, mindfulness, breath work, yoga, personal trainers, and we are looking at adding some other interesting types of therapy as well. I don't know, Neerja, whether you know of any, whether you've spoken to our Kate and our team about that, but we've even talked about things like art therapy or dance therapy, and which Neerja knows about. So we're always looking for other ways and means of providing support, and we're always welcome, always open to ideas. If anybody feels there's something that would make a difference, we'd love to look at that.
So looking after your well-being is incredibly important. So Harriet mentioned about dance. So dance is my well-being activity of choice, and I did some quality improvement projects around dance within the workplace, and it showed that people were happier, less stressed, and better doctors for their patients when they did 10 minutes of dance at lunchtime, which I thought was an incredible testament to the fact that a well-being activity can help your day-to-day resilience. It helps you to perform better and be less stressed. So that's my well-being activity, but for everyone that will be different. And it's important to recognize what people's needs and wants are. So whether that's having some talking therapy or doing some fitness and breath work, all of these things will help to reduce your stress levels, improve your well-being, and overall help your resilience to get through all of these challenges. I can't imagine how difficult it is trying to do a master's degree on top of training. That must be so difficult. So it's just important for people to recognize that it's okay to seek support, whether you're feeling that you are in a crisis or not, because you are going through a lot, and it's important to stay well and recognize what that is for you.
It certainly sounds like it's a charity that's looking to develop and change, and it's here for the future. Would you agree?
Absolutely. We didn't go through the rigorous process of becoming an official charity rather than just a limited company to, you know, walk once the pandemic's over. The inspiration came prior, and luckily the support doesn't seem to be waning. So it's definitely something that we want to continue to develop and improve.
That's really great to hear. Thank you. Neerja, I'd love to ask you a few more questions. So obviously you understand working in a busy GP surgery, the demands of everyday practice. So this podcast reaches all the advanced practitioners out there and the trainee advanced practitioners. So as well as working in the pandemic, a lot of them are also studying towards their master's degree. And we often see people really battling to get through that period of time is very stressful. How do you think looking after our well-being as advanced clinical practitioners and practitioners can help us stay, and it's a bit of a almost turned into a taboo word, but stay resilient in our job?
Yeah, no, so it's a really good question. So let's address resilience first. So resilience is, like you said, it's become a bit of a taboo word because a lot of people see resilience as must keep going and must keep fighting, whereas resilience is actually bouncing back in spite of adversity. So we've all been incredibly resilient over the past 18 months. We've dealt with a complete life change. Everything has changed for everyone, whether you're in the NHS or not. We have shown natural resilience by the fact that we were able to change and adapt to online working, to remote consultations. Everything has changed. And just by virtue of the fact we've done that, we've shown that we are incredibly resilient. But we just need to make sure that resilience isn't used in a negative way. So sometimes managers or bosses might say, well, you need to be more resilient, or it's like a weakness if you're not seen to be resilient. Healthcare practitioners always feel that they have to give and give. And what we recognize, and the pandemic has brought to the fore, even though Harriet has said very rightly that this was a pre-pandemic issue, but it's just been highlighted by the pandemic, is that we all have, essentially, you can think of it as an empathy bucket. And we also suffer from compassion fatigue and moral injury, which means that we don't feel that we're able to do the best for every contact that we have. Now, these things have happened because of our increase in workload, which has been so steep over the past 18 months. But that's a magnification of what was happening before. So what we know is that healthcare practitioners are not superhuman. We do all have a limit to what we're able to do before it starts to affect us personally. So imagine when you go home, are you worried about the patients that you've seen throughout the day? Do you feel that you've given the same service to the last patient of the day as you did to the first patient of the day? And it's often not the case. So this is a really good kind of signpost for us to make sure that we are looking after ourselves so we can give better service to all of our patients and make sure that we are being the best healthcare professionals for the people we're looking after. Because as cliche as it might sound, but if we don't look after ourselves, we can't look after other people. And we would much rather have somebody take time and invest in their well-being earlier on, like you said, in a preventative or restorative way, than reach that point of burnout and essentially then need to take time completely away from the healthcare service. So it's much, much better to anticipate these things, improve our well-being, improve our resilience, so that actually we can provide a better service. Because it's a horrible feeling when we feel we can't do our best, and everyone wants to do that. Fundamentally, the people that are working for the NHS are good people that want to help other people. So it's important to recognize that you can prioritize yourself, and it's important to do that, and doing so will make you a better healthcare provider for the patients that you're seeing.
I really like that concept of the bucket, because I think that empty or low bucket is something that probably every healthcare practitioner has experienced and can really relate to. So I think when you put it into those terms, you can really reflect upon when that might be happening to you or has happened to you in the past. I guess touching on reflection, it's obviously really important to reflect, to try and have some realization about how our mental health is. Do you have any tips of ways that we can reflect within ourselves to think if we're nearing those points?
Yeah, so moral injury is essentially when we feel like we haven't done the best for our patients. So when we're in a pandemic situation, for example, if you imagine the first wave of the pandemic, we had lots of patients who would have turned up to A&E that had to be sent home because they didn't meet the criteria to be admitted, and there was COVID, so we couldn't treat people in the normal way. That meant that, and in general practice, for example, people didn't necessarily come in, cancer diagnoses were missed. All of these things that happened, it makes people feel that they haven't done the best job that they could do. And this moral injury is actually described, generally speaking, when talking about the military. And actually, now we're implying it to healthcare, because it's actually what's going on is that the workload versus what we're able to give doesn't match. So that has an impact on people over time. Now, compassion fatigue is, if you imagine your empathy as a bucket that's full of water, and imagine that every patient that you see, you're giving a cup of water to, by the end of the day, your bucket can be empty. So your choices are to either refill that bucket. And some, for some people, that might be doing a regular yoga session or breath work, or to give less, so to work less, but that's often not possible. So it's important to fill up that bucket as best as possible. And we also talk about the fact the bucket can be leaking. So even though it's not a patient experience, you might have holes in the bucket, which are, you've got a sick child at home who's also needing some of your attention. You've got an elderly parent that you're looking after. So your holes in your bucket, and you're taking out with a cup each time. So how can we reinforce the metal in that bucket to stop you from actually going very empty? And the most relatable way of describing this is when you go home from work, are you a wonderful person to your family or flatmates? Or do you come home and have to offload about work first? Or do you get angry? Are you short? Are you snappy? Are you upset because of everything that you've been through the day? So it's important to take breaks, invest in your well-being, because otherwise your workplace will spill into your home. And that's when we start to see the downward spiral towards burnout, unfortunately.
Neerja, you touched on some really interesting words there. So moral injury and empathy fatigue. I wonder if you could talk to me a little bit more about that.
That's a really great thing to say, Natalie. So we did some work. So I also have a wellbeing organisation that I run with a colleague called the Workwell Doctors. And we did an event with Duty to Care for the Royal College of GPs. And we talked about exactly this point. So there's something called the stress performance curve, which talks about how stress, when stress goes up, our performance increases. But when stress is at too high a level, our performance starts to decrease. So for example, if there was a recess situation, you see someone collapsed on the street, everyone will rush in, and actually things go very well because people go into action, they go into autopilot, and things happen very quickly under a high performance after a high level of stress. However, what we know is, like in the pandemic, when the stress levels have continued, the workload has continued, and there hasn't been a respite, we start to fall down that curve. So our performance starts to decrease. You might notice you're making more mistakes. You might be getting more complaints for things that you wouldn't have done before. So what we said to people during that workshop is, what things would people say about you when you're having a bad day? And the majority of people said words like irritated, snappy, short, hangry, all of these words that we associate with when we're not performing our best. But when we are at our best, how would people describe most NHS staff? Caring, kind, effervescent, smiley. And we can see that those responses change when that stress level continues for too long. What I want people to do is imagine that curve. So when things are going well, how are you? And when things are not going well, how do people describe you? And if you think that those words are starting to change, then that is the point that we need to try and catch people, that they're not completely reaching a burnout phase, but things are not perhaps going so well. So how can we address?
That's another question for... why do you think it's important to look after our well-being as providers of healthcare?
So I think the most important thing is to talk to one another. And we talk about this in our workshops all the time, but when you're working in a pandemic, and especially somewhere like general practice where we all work in our individual rooms, or if you're in a hospital working in PPE, you can't see people's facial expressions. You might not interact with people. You might have been segmented into different working streams. If you don't interact with these people on a regular basis, how are you supposed to know that someone's not okay? And so this actually all starts with the regular conversation and communication, without which it's impossible to recognize if someone's having a bad day. That is the paramount thing. But also to make sure that people don't feel afraid of speaking to their colleagues about services like Duty to Care, because I can promise you that I have told every single colleague of mine about Duty to Care. And to be honest, without fail, majority of them have signed up. And that's because actually the need is very much there. But sometimes people need to be approached with a solution before they can actually think about what to do. And the stigma does still slightly exist. So it's important to say things, but also not carry a judgment. So I've had many a colleague who I've said, oh, so I can see that you're going through a bit of a tough time. Did Duty to Care is there? And they say, oh, that's very nice. Thank you so much. And several weeks later, they say, just to let you know, I did sign up to Duty to Care. I've started my therapy. It's going very well. But that talking about, yes, I'm actually going to seek therapy, there is still a bit of stigma for some people. And it's important to recognize that conversation might not go necessarily yes, I'll sign up for therapy today, but note the person will probably take heed of what you're saying and they might seek therapy when it's time, when the time is right for them.
Again, I think I can definitely really relate to those things. And when you think about it, and for me, I tend to go very quiet the moment I get home and don't want to speak about things. And again, if you look back now and I reflect upon that, you can see that that perhaps is a period of time when you need to do some deeper work to make sure that your mental health and well-being is okay. Thinking about that, I think sometimes when you work within a team, it's quite easy to notice those traits in your colleagues, and sometimes before they notice them themselves. What kind of advice would you give to other colleagues if they notice that they feel like their colleagues are struggling?
Yes, 100%. There is this feeling of seeking therapy as, you know, a healthcare professional feels like it can be a sign of weakness, but that's an internal thing that people feel. And it's right now we're trying to normalize everything and destigmatize everything. And once I saw the number of my colleagues that had benefited from duty to care, it started to become a much more open conversation. And people are much happier to talk about it when they realize that actually they're really not alone and everyone is having some sort of struggle. And even though it might be different to the person next to you, we now very readily have conversations of how was your therapy? Yeah, it went well. Thank you so much. Some people have finished with duty to care because the therapy sessions are a certain length and actually said, well, do you know what? I want to carry on with this, and seeing that they want to continue to do therapy in some form, or that they need to engage in a different kind of therapy. And making it destigmatized is so important so that we can actually move forward and get people the help that they so need.
And also, I think there's something about airing it out and sharing it. And I think sometimes the stigma that you attach to yourself, the second that you air it out, you realize that everyone is actually thinking very similar things to you or having or had those similar experiences. And it doesn't seem quite so daunting when you share it with other people. For you, so I think you might have slightly different views on, but what would you say the ethos of Duty to Care is? If you to sum up the charity in a couple of sentences, what is Duty to Care to you?
It is a open service that is broad in what it provides. Our key focus is to eliminate barriers. And I think a big part of it is to change that dialogue around stigmatization as well.
I'd say it's an open service. It's free at the point of access. And it's there for people regardless of their stage of needing help. That's the thing that I would really say as a take home, because a lot of people feel, like we said, they have to be at that breaking point to seek support, and duty to care is not that at all. It's there for people at all stages.
So great, because we've got those different levels of like preventative, restorative, and of course, if it gets to kind of crisis point as well, these services are helpful. So it's really nice that it crosses the boundaries of all of them, which is wonderful. Thank you so much. So I'd love to know, I think, if there's kind of some keen people out there that would love to tie in a little bit of looking after their own well-being by maybe perhaps doing something like a run, but also perhaps if anyone wanted to raise money for the charity, can I ask how they might go about that?
Yeah, sure. We would absolutely love that. If you go to the website, which is duty2care.info, there are contact details there that will go through to some of our volunteers. We've had some amazing people coming forward over the last 18 months plus. We've had people embark on personal challenges, whether it's marathons or triathlons, and we've also had people take the charity to their place of work and initiate sort of company-wide fundraisers, whether that's sport challenges, competitive team type setups. We've had people at brands facilitate campaign. Lots of sporting activities in general, I'd say that's been, and we've got some people running the marathon for us, which is great.
Fabulous. And can we find you on social media?
Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And the Instagram is just at Duty to Care. And through that, well, through the website, you can link to all the others as well.
Thank you so much to Harriet and Neeta for coming on the podcast today. Just to summarise some of the amazing work that your charity are doing. So you are called Duty to Care and you offer free wellbeing and psychological services to all NHS staff, no matter what profession. And you can register to use it by using your NHS account if you go to the Duty to Care website. And it's all about
as clinicians, we need to take care and look after our mental health, whether that be affected by work or kind of outside work, and that we would urge you to use charity. So thank you so much for coming along and joining us on today's podcast. So please join us next week when we have more exciting guests on the podcast. Click and subscribe on the podcast to hear the latest edition in the series.
If any of the topics or subjects in today's podcast have affected you or made you think you want to get some help or get in touch, please check out the description in the podcast for signposting and details of where to go. Thank you.